all you positive heads out there. It's so good to be back with all you beautiful reflections of the one source consciousness that creates and animates all things. If you're new to this podcast, of course, we are super happy to have you here, and we just ask that you bring an open mind and heart to your listening experience and to be prepared to explore vantage points that I'm convinced will help shift or solidify your current understanding of the ultimate nature of reality in a way that is extremely empowering. Speaking of exploring powerful perspectives, I would like to gift my book, The Golden Key, Modern Alchemy to Unlock Infinite Abundance, to you at goldenkey.gift, where you can get the audio or ebook as my gift to you by using the code POSITIVEHEAD at checkout. All right, all you positive heads, on this week's SoulShare episode, I'm very excited to have Linda Schiller here with me on the show. Linda is a body, mind, and spiritual psychotherapist who has been working in the fields of dreamwork and trauma treatment for 40 years. On this episode, we are going to discuss her brand new book, PTS Dreams, which helps readers transform their nightmares from trauma through healing dreamwork. Hello there, Linda. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
Yes, definitely. No, this is a topic that hits close to home for a lot of people. And so, yeah, very, very excited to dive into your insights. And before we do, I would like to start with my cliche opening question. And my question is this: you're in an elevator. The woman next to you looks over, says, "What's your passion?" You have 10 floors to answer. What do you say?
Healing through dream work.
With 9 floors to go, it leaves time for some questions. So fair enough. I imagine it would be something along those lines. Why don't you do this, Linda, if you would take a moment and just share as much as is pertinent, is relevant regarding your backstory, how you ended up in this unique line of work and how you got here.
Great. Thanks, Brendan. So when I was, from a very early age, when I was a kid, I was always interested in sort of the paranormal and extra sensory ways of dealing and coping with the world, and was always kind of tuned in to other possibilities in addition to linear time. So it started when I was pretty young, just kind of paying attention to that. And like many young people, I think young girls in particular, though I'm sure boys do as too, you know, we had a Ouija board and we'd have seances and call in the spirits. And I remember there was one occasion where we really kind of freaked ourselves out because the candle just went out and we were in a room with no draft. And it's like, okay, I think we're dealing with something more than our 10-year-old minds really can understand. So moving on from there, I wasn't really having that many dreams that I remembered at that point in time. But then I went to high school, went to college. And after college, I went to Europe with a friend. And then after that, went and lived in Israel for 5 years. But while I was in Europe, we were in Greece and we were on the island of Corfu. And it was Crete. And I think I had my first experience of feeling like myself and nature were part of the same entity and that there was a story coming up. I remember climbing up over the hills. We were on our way to find a place to go swimming. Mm-hmm. And we crested the top of the hills and this whole panoramic landscape spread out in front of us. And I remember stopping and feeling the stones talking to me, not in language, but in that felt sense of there's other ways to connect with and perceive the world than the ones we normally do. And I think that was when the door opened to me to multiple ways of connecting. And then I went on from there and lived in Israel for about 5 years, during which time, as we talked a little bit about in our getting to know each other before recording, I got to visit the desert many, many times and did hiking while I was there. I didn't live in the desert, but I did a lot of hiking while I was there and felt really connected with the spirits of the land. And I use that phrase purposefully about the spirits of the land. And that sense of the waking and the sleeping dreams that carry through from nature through us into our consciousness and beyond. And as I'm sort of listening to myself talk right now, it sounds to me very similar to what the Aboriginals in Australia talk about, that the world was created through what is called in Australia the dream time. That's mm-hmm, what it's called. Mm-hmm. We dream the world into being. So I really felt that being in the desert. Mm. Came back to America after a couple of years to finish graduate school, landed in the Boston area, and got involved with the dance community that I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, a friend of mine moved up from New York City. And she said, Linda, I'm so done with New York. I really, it's too much city for me. I don't miss anything about it, except my dream circle. Mm. So I'm going to start a dream circle in Boston. And would you join my dream circle? And without batting an eye, I just said, yes. And then my next question to her was, what's a dream circle? So part of me knew this was something I had to say yes to even before I actually knew what it was.
Right.
So in a nutshell, a dream circle is a bunch of people who get together in generally a small group for the purpose of dream sharing. And we started meeting, there were four of us, and we met every couple of weeks, bringing our dreams together and helping each other understand what our dreams might mean and learning along the way. So at that point in time in my 20s, I started going to conferences and started reading books and started going to workshops to learn more and more about dreaming because I was fascinated with it. And that question of, will you join my dream circle, became sort of the jumping off point for my life's work. Wow. And carrying on since then, I've incorporated dream work not only in my private life, but into my therapeutic and clinical practices as well. So there's the story.
Isn't it fascinating how one little, you know, moment, one little offering can just shift our whole reality? And in your case, now here you are, you know, 40 years later working in that arena. And I suppose the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, what, as you started going down the path of really giving a lot of energy and attention to your dream life, what came up for you that led you to, you know, be fascinated enough to make it your life work?
When we are using our conscious waking mind, we're actually only using about 5 to 10% of our brain's potential.
Right.
And as I learned this, this is actually a fact. I'm not sort of just hypothesizing. I just am finishing a book right now by Bruce Lipton called The Biology of Belief.
Oh, wonderful book.
Isn't it great? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been a guest on the show here.
Pardon?
He's been a guest on the show as well. And I just love him.
Yeah. So I just had a friend recommend him and I'm loving it. But anyway, as I started doing the work in the field, working with clients of all different ages, particularly teens, but adults and kids as well, I started off my clinical work working with teens. Teens, you know, are often resistant to going to therapy and they don't want to talk to someone who's an adult and they don't want to talk about their issues or their problems. However, they love to talk about their dreams. Mm. So I found a back door in to making connections. And as I worked with these teens, so for the first, I don't know, between 3 to 5 years of, well, no, actually more, the first 5 to 7 years of my clinical practice, I was primarily working with adolescents. And I found that the more I could get them to talk about their dreams, the deeper we go, the more potential healing we'd be able to access, the more they could engage. And I just saw the potential for accessing that other, you know, 90 to 95% of our unconscious that's available to us that we can't access as easily in our waking life.
Right.
So that just sort of set me in the direction.
Gotcha. And makes a lot of sense. And I know, you know, with this particular book, and you've written now a couple of books on dreaming, right? This is being your second.
That's right.
So PTSD, of course, is something that you hear a lot about these days in trauma and how to recover from trauma. And you know, what is the correlation between one's trauma, you know, PTSD, and the dream world?
Great question. So when someone has experienced an event in their life that is overwhelming and difficult, and it's recorded not only in our brain, but in our physical body as well. When we've gone through traumatic events in our life, whether it's public trauma or private trauma, right? There's sort of two different kinds. Mm-hmm. Public trauma is the kind of thing that that everybody can see and recognize, like somebody is an earthquake survivor, somebody is a war veteran, somebody lives through a pandemic and has people they love die. These kind of traumas are publicly shared and acknowledged. So we have a certain set of responses, whether it was a long or a short term length of time that we had the trauma will depend on how we do or don't sort of metabolize and work it through in our life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The other type of trauma, which is called private trauma, is the kind that happens mostly behind closed doors. This is when someone is growing up in a difficult home family situation where they have physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, serious neglect, growing up in alcoholic family systems, growing up with parents who are mentally ill, whether it's in their family or happening in an institution like their school or their church or their scout troop. And here we have the added dimension that it's a secret, right? With public trauma, everybody knows, okay, yes, this happened. This person was a prisoner of war, and we all agree that that happened, and we can understand. The other kind, the private trauma, often there's the added secondary trauma of being told or asked to keep it a secret or not tell, or if they do share it, whether or not they're believed, whether or not they're supported, and whether or not they're able to be taken or get to a safe place once they've shared. So all these responses and reactions will affect how someone does or doesn't easily heal and recover.
Gotcha.
So that's the background of trauma. PTSD, I'm getting to the whole question. PTSD, the letters are post-traumatic stress disorder. So not everyone who experiences trauma develops PTSD. The D part, something to get into the category of being a disorder, by means that in the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is the sort of the way diagnoses are made, you have to be struggling with the symptoms of post-trauma stress for 6 months or more for it to be sort of classified as a disorder.
I see.
Because it's a normal trauma response to be frightened, to have somatic issues, to have nightmares, to have an extreme startle response, to be kind of depressed, to have uncontrolled anxiety, all these things we might associate with PTSD. These are normal trauma responses. However, if we don't heal them on our own or with the help of family, friends, professionals, if they become entrenched, that's when it becomes the disorder.
Yeah.
So the last part of your question then, how's this connected with dreams? One of the primary symptoms of PTSD are nightmares. And sometimes the nightmares are actual replay of the traumatic event over and over and over again each night. And often, however, they're couched in symbol and metaphor, and our dreams come through with a lot of upsetting emotional content, but just weird stuff or stuff that we don't associate with that event.
Yeah.
But the nightmares grab hold of us and we can't shake them.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Do you believe that a lot of the weird nightmares and things that, you know, we kind of wake up scratching our head, let's say it's not something that's directly related to the trauma, but it's an avenue, something I've often thought, or I think I heard it a long time ago and it kind of resonated with me and made sense, that we will experience a lot of these scary, dark, fearful kind of things so that we can process that energy inside of us in the dream state as opposed to, you know, a waking state, if you will. It's almost like an outlet to allow the stuff to be felt and move through.
Absolutely. If we have scary dreams, but we're able to, what we say in the dream world, to metabolize the messages on our own, then the dreams are literally helping us process through our body as well as our mind, our conscious and unconscious, whatever it was that happened. And ideally, the nightmares will begin to abate and slack off, or the emotion connected with the dreams will change from fear and anxiety to being kind of maybe mildly upsetting to being kind of neutral to being something positive. So right. If our system can metabolize whatever happened, that's what will happen with the dreams. And eventually the nightmares will then just stop on their own. If that isn't what happens, that's when we have to bring our sleeping dreams into our waking life, because we can interact with our dreams in our wake state through a whole variety of different methodologies that allow us to kind of go through the portal from our waking world to our unconscious and heal in that place that we couldn't manage to do on our own when we were sleeping.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit more about that and when it is appropriate and how one would go about sort of interacting with this, you know, dream state vision in their waking world.
Is that the next question?
I'd love to just, if there's a particular technique, like let's say I have a recurring, you know, scary or frightening dream, which a lot of people I think do, you know, and it's kind of one of those things that leaves you scratching your head. Like, why do I keep, you know, dreaming about, I think of my uncle telling me years ago, he would have a recurring dream of being in a plane that is going down and it's on fire and then an explosion happens and it's kind of like he wakes up. So something like that, as an example, that's recurring, that keeps coming back, you know, time and time again, you're scratching your head like, what does this mean? Why do I keep having this dream? It's frightening. What kind of advice would you give to someone like that on, you know, what to do about it?
Yeah. Okay. So for starters, if we have a recurring dream, that's like an SOS from our unconscious saying, hello, wake up, trying to tell you something here. You're not listening. I'm going to keep coming back and coming back and coming back until you finally wake up to your dream and say, wait a minute, what is this dream telling me? What does it want from me? And then most importantly for the healing, what am I supposed to do differently in my life that I'm already doing in order to resolve whatever's causing this dream? So the book, basically the whole book is about that. And in my new book, PTS Dreams, in the beginning, it sort of talks in detail about the relationship between trauma and dream and nightmares. And then the subsequent chapters are all about how do we work with the dreams? How do we work with the nightmares? And there's a whole chapter that, I have it right here. I want to give you the title of that chapter about recurring dreams. Round and round we go, getting off the merry-go-round of recurring dreams. That's chapter 7. That's the whole chapter, chock full of talking about recurring dreams. When our unconscious gives us something more than once, then we know it's really important. If it's doubled, if it's tripled, if it goes on and on, it's our unconscious saying, this is really important. And we're not going to, pun intended, let you rest until you deal with it. So there are three places in which you can deal with the upsetting nightmares: before you go to sleep, while you're having your dream, and then after you wake up. The majority of the things we do to interact with the dream are going to be after we wake up.
Right.
But before we go to sleep, there are things we can do to help us feel safer in the night. so we can invoke an energy field of protection around us. I'm going to invite you to go get a cup of coffee. He's recovering from Burning Man.
Yeah, exactly.
For those of you who are listening, Brandon is just yawning there. I hope I'm not too boring.
No, it's not. Trust me, it's way less you and more me and my lack of sleep, but it's very interesting.
I get it. Yeah. So can you surround yourself with some kind of protection in the room before you go to sleep? Put an egg or a bubble of light around you to keep the nightmares from coming through. In Native American traditions, for example, they hang a dream catcher over the baby's bed. And the idea of an authentic dream catcher will have a hole in the middle. And the idea is the tangled threads will catch the demons and evil spirits and bad dreams, and the hole in the middle will allow the good dreams to come through.
Right.
So you can hang a dream catcher in your room, or your version of whatever that be. You can also spend some time doing some journaling. And when I'm working with people who want to work with and remember their dreams, you know that if we don't write it down, we're probably not going to remember it.
Right.
So I really strongly encourage all the listeners to get a dream journal, to keep it by their bed, to write it down as immediately as possible once they remember, because you sit up, you move too fast, and poof, it's gone.
Right.
In the case of recurring terrifying nightmares, maybe we wish they were gone.
Mm-hmm.
So we can use the journal for other things as well. Before going to sleep, then, you can do what's called dream incubation with your journal. And spend anywhere from, you know, one or two sentences to writing a couple pages, whatever you like, about what you want. You can write something like, please don't send me anything more than I can handle in my dreams. Or please let me feel calm and relaxed enough to understand the message that this dream is trying to tell me.
Yeah.
Or I promise that this time I'll pay attention and work on my dream. Let me capture it so I can take it somewhere else. And you can have a little conversation with your dream guide.
Right.
About
right.
what you'd like to happen.
I think that's a great approach. Obviously, the more energy and intention we put into something like that, the more we're going to get out of it, right? It's like getting yourself prepared. It's inviting the result that you want, as opposed to just sort of allowing it to happen completely outside of your involvement.
Right, right. We can direct our thoughts and our intentions where we want them to go. We can't control them, but we can invite them to go in a particular direction.
Yeah, and you know, you often hear with dreams, you know, people will ask, well, what were you feeling during the experience? What is the emotional narrative, right? And do you agree that that, you know, is even more or equal to the, you know, circumstances of the dream as what you were feeling during the experience?
Right. That's the difference between a dream and a nightmare.
Hmm.
A dream is when the emotions or the emotional narrative connected with the dream are pleasant or fun or neutral.
Mm-hmm.
A bad dream might be where the emotions are kind of upsetting, but not terribly. And a nightmare is when the emotions are really negative and really strong.
Yeah.
So let me just, an example, every person has their own emotional response to the symbols and images that come through. So if you dream of meeting a dog on the road, and I dream of meeting a dog on the road, we have the same dream. But in my dream, I crouch down and I say, oh, look at you, such a cute doggy. And I pet it and I ask the owner of the dog, tell me his name. And I'm very delighted to meet this dog. That's a whole different dream than if you see the same dog on the road and you say, uh-oh, I'm going to get attacked or bit. I better turn and get out of here as fast as I possibly can.
Right.
So same dream, but the emotional narrative is different.
Yeah.
That's the difference. One was not a nightmare and one was.
Right, right. And, you know, one of the things that comes up, I've thought of a lot with dreaming, and I'm curious your thoughts, you know, there's this idea of something that's your subconscious trying to share something with you. I think most people will agree there's something to that. But then you have this idea of, you know, having like a prophetic dream or, you know, a visitation dream. from maybe a lost loved one or something like that, or a spirit guide. So I'm curious what your thoughts are pertaining to that. And if, you know, if you agree that there are these sort of different things that can happen in the dream state, you know, how you sort of gauge and determine that.
So I absolutely do. And when I do dream work with people, I let them know that there are multiple layers of truth in every dream that can be simultaneously true. It doesn't have to be either or. So in both of the books, I talk about two methods that I've designed for doing this work. And in terms of attending to the layers of the dream, there's a method I've designed called the Pardes. And that is a Hebrew word, and it means orchard. If you just translate it, it means an orchard. But it's also an acronym for reading holy or sacred texts with ever deepening layers of inquiry. So I took this method and applied it to doing dream work so we can look at these multiple layers of a dream as deeply as we want. So the first layer, the P in Hebrew, is pshats, which means simple. And that's just the storyline. I have a dream. I'm flying in the sky, or I'm like your uncle, I'm flying in an airplane. And in your uncle's case, his airplane was burst into flames and was going to crash.
Right.
That's the pshat layer, the storyline of the dream. Second layer, the R, is remez, which means hinted at. So this layer would be our first associations. Oh, it kind of reminds me of this, or, oh yeah, I'm dreaming about traveling in India because I had Indian food for dinner last night. That's my association. Okay, great. We're good to go there. So you don't have to work too hard for that associative layer. The third layer then is the D, or the drosh, and that comes from the word lidrosh, which means to pursue or chase after. And this is the layer where we peel back the dream like the layers of an onion, and we start to look at what possible metaphor or symbol is the dream containing, and what are the characters in the dream? And this might be a layer where we might do, for example, one method of dream work is the Gestalt method, where we become every character and even every object or landscape in the dream and speak from that voice. So I might, in the dream with the dog, I might say, as the dog, here's what I have to say, or as the dog's owner, here's what I have to say, or as the road under my feet, here's the message I'm giving you. Okay. So lots of different possible perspectives can emerge in this layer. The fourth layer, which is the one you were mostly asking about, is the Sod, which stands for secret. And this is the transpersonal mystical layer where we can have visions and prophetic dreams, where we can peek around the corner of time and space to see things that haven't yet happened in linear time. And often this is the layer also when we do get visits from departed relatives. Because there's a difference between a dream where you dreamed of someone who reminds you of your mom and kind of looks like your mom, and a dream where this is not a dream, this is a visit. Your mom is right here in the room with you, and you know it, and you know it.
Right. And do you think there are, you know, some people that are more susceptible to these sorts of, you know, let's say deeper layers, where, like, you know, this person is able to have visitations on a regular basis and someone else is super frustrated because, oh, my departed grandmother never visits me and they visit my brother or sister. You know, do you have any thoughts on that and how to sort of invoke more of that? If it's something you're seeking?
Sure. So there are two types of people in the world in terms of the boundaries or two other dimensions. There are thin boundaried people and thick boundaried people. And neither one is better or worse, it's just different.
Yeah.
Thick boundaried people are people who are pretty solidly grounded in the waking on the earth plane and don't tend to be often that interested in or connected to other ways of understanding or connecting with people. Then you pick up your phone or you text on your phone. The thin boundary people, the passages are easier. the float between dimensions is simpler. If you are interested, and so those people tend to more easily get connected with people from the beyond or other lifetimes or their ancestors. If you want to, but you haven't yet, like in your example, hey, my brother or my sister, you know, grandma visits them all the time. How come she doesn't come visit me? The first thing I would say is, have you invited her?
Mm.
So for starters, you know, we don't know exactly what souls on the other side are doing, but they might want an invitation too. Just like, you know, before you go over to your friend's house, you know, you want to have an invitation first. Sometimes you just go over and knock on the door maybe, but an invitation is nice.
Yeah.
So definitely. For starters, I'd say to someone, invite grandma to come. Invite her. And then perhaps you're going to incubate writing down in your journal that you'd like to have a visit. Perhaps you're going to imagine your energy body getting more permeable so that you can more easily sense when she's come. And then the other thing is to recognize what is or isn't a dream. Because sometimes right. people think a dream is only when there's a whole storyline and this happened and then that happened and I'm in Cairo or I'm in Bolivia or I'm in California. But sometimes a dream is just an emotion or a body sense. So if you wake up, for example, and your grandma was someone who made you cookies and you loved the smell and the taste of grandma's cookies and she had a really nice lap and it was really cuddly and warm to be in her lap and you woke up somehow kind of smelling cookies or feeling kind of cuddled and warm, even if you didn't see grandma, I'd say she visited.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm curious also, of course, one of the things we haven't touched on is lucid dreaming. And, you know, that's something that I know some people, yet again, will have lots of lucid dreams and others, you know, not so much. And, of course, that's when you become aware in the dream state that you are dreaming and then they're able to, you know, take control to some degree and sort of, you know, take the reins of the dream as opposed to it just steering you. And so I'm curious what your, you know, what your thoughts are, you know, regarding lucid dreaming.
So lucid dreaming is one of like the hot items right now in the dream world. And a lot of people are really interested in it. And there are books and there are podcasts and there are online journals and all kinds of things where if you're interested in lucid dreaming, you can actually train yourself to learn how to lucid dream.
Mm-hmm.
And like anything else, when you're training, it, you know, the more you practice, the better you get at it. And there are two layers or levels, if you will, of lucid dreaming. And this is what I alluded to before when I said, if you want to work with your dreams or nightmares, there's the before, the during, and after the dream. Here's the during part, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the hypnagogic or hypnopompic zone, which is that in between place, you know, when you're just waking up and you're just falling asleep, where you're not quite asleep or you're not quite awake. In those in between zones, those liminal states, you could have dreams where you're kind of aware you're dreaming, even though you're sort of already awake. That counts too as a lucid dream.
Yeah,
it's called wilding, and the wild stands for waking induced lucid dreaming.
Mm.
And then in the dream, you can teach yourself, and that's a different podcast, to become aware and know you're dreaming and then take some measure of control within your dream. And what I tell people who are working with traumatic nightmares is that there are pluses and minuses to being lucid in the dream, because you don't want to simply fly away from the monster you encountered on the path.
Yeah.
Even though that might be what you would like to do, because then you won't get the message.
Yeah.
Then you won't get the learning. Then you won't face the monster and say, who are you really? And why are you here? And what have you got to tell me?
Right.
So I caution people, if they're going to work lucidly with their nightmares, to really find a way to stay safe first. And one of the things I talk about in my book is the Gaia method that I've developed, which stands for guided active imagination approach. And there are two parts to that. And the first part is you spend a long time really setting up a safe place and get all your allies and all your posse, whoever and whatever you want, to feel really safe before going into like the belly of the beast and dealing with the scariest part of the nightmare so that you don't get re-traumatized.
Yeah.
Once you've got your safety, people and spirits and objects, you can then peek into the dream, see if there were any safety items or people or objects in the, already there that you might not have noticed, engage with them as well. And then go lucidly into your dream and talk with the monster or talk to the tidal wave or talk with the thing that scared you from a place of safety and connection. So that would be my caveat around lucid dreaming with trauma-induced nightmares. And then, of course, you've got lots of choices.
Yeah. I definitely like that. And, you know, it comes to mind as we talk about this. A friend I had on this show many, many years ago in the early days of the show, he runs a festival called Lucidity Festival, and he lucid dreams all the time. It's a big part of his dream life. And I remember him sharing a story with me that kind of ties into this whole conversation, which was he would have a recurring dream of this sort of werewolf creature, you know, in his dream state. And it would run, charge at him, snarling and drooling, and he would sort of pop out of the dream, you know, run from it, scared. And he finally, after it just recurring after a long period of time, he decided to face it. And so as it's coming at him, he opens his arms and embraces this, you know, this werewolf creature, which then it embraces him and they start dancing and it's like drooling on his shoulder. And it's like, he kind of faced it. And then they sort of come together in a way that was celebratory. And I always thought that was such an interesting, you know, interesting dream and journey that he had, hearing about, like, you know, running, avoidance, and then finally facing the scary thing, only for it to kind of become, you know, silly and jovial, if you will.
You know, your friend must have a lot of courage.
Yeah.
Because he turned around, I think you said he turned around to face this monster simply when he kind of became fed up with it chasing him.
Yep.
And he didn't like bring any, you know, force field or shield or friend to help, or he just did it.
Yeah.
So, good on him. Actually, there's a story really interesting that I tell in the book, a friend of mine who had a similar kind of dream that she was being chased by a monster for a long, long time. And she invoked in her dream her connection with her some friends and some relatives while she was sleeping. So she was lucid in this dream in order to feel safe and protected enough. And she did just what your friend did. She turned and faced the monster. And she said, "Why are you chasing me?" She had a dialogue with him. She didn't just hold her arms out. She wasn't quite ready for that yet. She turned and said, "Why are you chasing me?" And he said, "I've been trying to give you a gift.
Wow.
For all these years, but you keep running away from me."
Wow.
And it turns out that he had a gift for her, and he held out his hands, and in his hands was this glowing light. And he said, "I wanted to give you this light to put in your heart to keep you safe and know that your heart light is still there, even when you're feeling like you're in the darkness in the world."
Wow.
It was just so gorgeous. And she would never have gotten that heart light had she not turned to face the monster.
Wow. Yeah, I feel like that's such a big part of facing our fears and the shadow, if you will, is like on the other side of that, when we are brave enough to do it, there's a gift there in some way.
Exactly.
And it's really interesting, because anytime you hear that, both those stories are great examples of, you know, sort of this transmutation type experience. Or I think of my own son has been having dreams pretty regularly that I'm curious what you think about this, where it seems to almost go into like astral dimension where he feels like he's perceiving things in his room sometimes, especially late at night when he's, you know, almost asleep, and where he feels like he's seeing like insect kind of like spider creatures in the corners of his room. And then he had a dream a few weeks ago where he was in the dream. It was a positive dream. Then all of a sudden there's one of these spider beings in his dream. It then wakes him up, and then he thinks he perceives it in his room. So there's almost like a crossover. And then, of course, after focusing, it kind of disappears. So I'm curious what you think about that and something that's recurring, and how it maybe ties into, you know, the astral plane and so on.
Absolutely. So the first thing I want to ask is, how old is your son?
He's 23, actually.
Oh, so this is not a little kid.
Not a little kid, no. No, I'm more of the little kid. He's more of the adult.
So I'm glad I asked, because I would give a whole different answer if he was a little kid. Because with little kids, there's a period of time in their life where it's sort of normative to have nightmares. Because little people, you know, they don't have any control. They don't have any power. Big people tell them what to do all the time. So having dreams where they feel powerless or out of control are sort of reflection of reality.
Yeah.
But your son might be, you know, what we'd say, a thin boundaried person. Mm-hmm. And it might be that he more easily perceives other dimensions that people can't.
Seems like that's happening for him.
Yeah. So he has a couple of choices then to, you know, we're talking about, you know, do you befriend your monster? So if the creepy crawlers and the spiders are kind of freaking him out, he might want to, you know, play with what can he do before going to sleep to really make a safe space for himself in the room.
Yeah.
And then maybe he can journal like a dialogue and take both voices, his voice and the voice of the spider, and create a dialogue even before going to sleep where he says, who are you? What are you doing here? What's the message? What am I supposed to know or do? You know, why do you keep showing up for me? What's the message here? And you might get some real resolution on that.
Yeah.
If it's bothering him.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of those things where he's like a little confused by it, trying to, you know, he wants to figure it out, and it's sort of recurring. And so, you know, and then just having for the first time where it sort of bleeds through from dreaming into waking, and, you know, just like a series of repetitive, you know, and it feels like the perceiving these things sort of astrally, if you will, seems to be increasing. So he's just trying to make heads or tails of it all.
Mm. So the other two things I wouldn't want to neglect would be to have him think about or talk with you about, you know, has he had, I don't know how long he's been having this, if it's sort of recent or it's been a really long time, but find out when it started, how long it's been going on, and think about, did something happen in his life that, pun intended, creeped him out?
Yeah, right.
Or is there a metaphor here with spiders and spider webs, if it's always spiders? And then if he's struggling, you know, and I don't know if he is or isn't, but I would be remiss as a therapist not to say, you know, are there things he should talk to a professional about if he's having these kind of experiences with no apparent cause?
Right. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. It there's a lot there. I mean, there's a lot with his, I think could maybe tie in with his mother and things like that. There's, you know, so it's definitely an interesting case study, if you will. So he has been talking to someone to try and help sort of navigate through what their thoughts and opinions are. And to be determined.
And, you know, I don't know anything about your life or his life or his mother, but if, you know, when you mentioned the mother, I get an association that may have nothing to do with his life, but spiders are often thought of as in the female.
Spiders
having babies and eggs, and there's a spider called the Black Widow, which is clearly a female spider, and so there's a whole mythology around women and spiders and spider webs that can be positive or negative depending on you know the relationships.
Context. Right, right. And I know that's one of the things you talk about is family legacy, you know, burdens or epigenetic, you know, ancestral dreams as well, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that something you reference in the book?
Absolutely, yeah. Matter of fact, that's sort of the next piece of work I'm doing. I'm actually going to be teaching a class starting at the end of October for 3 sessions on healing ancestral trauma, finding the bright ones and healing the ancestral trauma in our legacies. And we can dream our own dreams. We can dream other people's dreams, and we can carry these unconscious messages that were passed down from generation to generation through our genetic coding. And then we can also dream for the world. So we can be carrying a history of something that didn't happen to us, but happened to someone else in our family line. And once we recognize and know it, then we can make the distinction and determination. Is this something that's me or mine, or is it actually not? And I can just put it down. There's another wonderful book. I don't know if you read Mark Wallen. He wrote a book called It Didn't Start With You.
No, not familiar.
It's a great book that really goes into this whole idea of epigenetics and ancestral lines in great detail.
Wow. Wow. And you just referenced, you said the bright ones. What do you mean by that term?
So in addition to the possibility of inheriting difficult or traumatic events in our life, we can also be passed down gifts and legacies of our bright ones, our healing ancestors, our strong guardian ancestors who are still available for us. And sometimes they're very specific gifts and sometimes they're more generic. But if we can identify someone, whether it's our parents or our grandparents or our great grandparents or somewhere in our family line, to find what's that special gift, whether it's an object or an emotional state or a positive attitude that we can carry. That's a gift from our past, as well as the possibility of a trauma from our past.
Interesting. If you had to give one piece of advice to listeners on how to get more benefit out of their dream world and to take, I guess, take control, get more benefit, make dreaming a positive component in their life, what would it be?
Well, I'm going to have to cheat and say two things instead of just
Fair
one.
Fair enough.
Okay. The first we've already talked about is keep a record, keep a journal. Not only will it help you remember, but it'll help you see patterns over time. If you haven't written down your dreams, it's much harder to go back and find the patterns.
Yeah.
So for multiple reasons, keep a journal. And then the other piece of advice is talk to other people. Because we all have blind spots and nobody can see the back of their own heads without not just one, but two mirrors. So have a buddy, have a family member, form a dream circle where you get together and spend time, you know, every couple of weeks processing and working on your dreams together. That's going to be, because you'll get points of view that you would never have thought of yourself.
Yeah.
If you're talking to other people about your dream. And if you're in a dream circle with other people, you will get hits and information and benefits from working on their dreams as well as your own.
Yeah.
Because it might resonate with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely makes sense because we all know where attention goes, energy flows. And if we're giving energy to something and getting more out of our dream state and taking actions that support that, it seems inevitable that, you know, more clarity and benefit would arise as a result, right?
Yeah, I was actually thinking that exact phrase, you know, a few minutes earlier, that where attention goes.
Yes, perfect.
Attention goes.
Perfect. Well, I would love to hear, you know, switch gears for a moment. I absolutely love to get stories of synchronicity, serendipity, positive paranormal stories, anything like that from my guest. I find, you know, inspiring story, fascinating. And I imagine you have something up your sleeve that would be fun to share.
So yeah, I have three things that actually come to mind. Let me see, which one will I pick?
Well, you could, and it won't hurt my feelings if you share more than one. So if you want to share them all, by all means.
The the most recent super quick one is there's I guess it's a podcast or a journal called Health and Spirituality. It's run by this by someone who my friend said, oh, you should go on this podcast. And within 2 days, both my publicist and my publisher said, oh, you should go on this person's podcast and we're going to hook you up with him.
Oh, wow.
Just like that. And now they've got me writing an article on anxiety, trauma, and nightmares to go on their show.
Wow.
So that just happened this week. That was really fun.
Gotta love those breadcrumbs.
Love the what?
I said, oh, you gotta love those breadcrumbs. Yeah.
Yeah, the breadcrumbs are great. They're great. And then the other one, quick one that comes to mind, this is kind of fun. I was at a one of my dream conferences a few years ago, and I'm a member of IASD, which is the International Association for the Study of Dreams. It's a wonderful, wonderful organization. I encourage any of your listeners who are interested in their dreams to check it out. So I'm taking a walk with a friend, and as we're walking down the path, there are these bushes to the side of us, and these beautiful, beautiful butterflies are landing on the bush. And we both notice and remark on the butterflies. And then one or the other of us says, oh, it reminds me of that poem by the Chinese philosopher Lao Tse, which is, what if I was a man dreaming of a butterfly?
Yeah.
But what if I'm a butterfly dreaming I'm a man? Mm-hmm. What then? Mm-hmm. So we shared this first piece of lovely, fun synchronicity. And then later in the day, I go into one of the workshops, and someone from, I think it was Bali, is giving a workshop about indigenous dreaming in Bali. And that person was asked the question, what's the nicest dream that anyone could possibly have in Balinese philosophy? And they responded, to dream of a butterfly on a bush.
Wow. You're in a dream right now, right? I suppose it's all different levels of dreaming, including our waking reality, right?
Right. You know that childhood nursery rhyme is more than we think? Row, row, row your boat.
Yeah.
Get you down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily. Life is but a dream.
Yes, indeed it is. Well, this has been a dreamy conversation with you today, Linda. I so appreciate you coming on and sharing your wisdom around dream work. And what is the best way for listeners to connect and follow your work? And where can they get the new book and the former book? And yeah, anything that you can share.
Thank you. So both of the books are published by Llewellyn Worldwide Publishing. So you can go to the Llewellyn website and order it right there. You, of course, can always get it on Amazon. And there's a indie bookstore link called bookstore.org that connects with all the indie bookstores around the country. And then I have a bunch of websites. So the one for the new book is simply www.ptsdreams.com, and then you can read about the book and see some of the endorsements and you kind of get a sense of what it's about and order there. And the other book, same idea, it's www.moderndreamwork.com. And then I have a personal website where you can sort of read about what I do in the world, all the different things I do, and connect if you would like, which is Linda Yael Schiller. And that's LindaYaelSchiller.com. And that's got a bunch of pages on different things.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, this has been quite the conversation. Thoroughly enjoyed connecting with you. I do have one final question for you today, and it is my cliche closer, which is, in 60 seconds or less, what is the meaning of life, according to Linda Schiller?
That's great. Wow, I have to think on my feet quickly. The meaning of life is to connect with love and offer healing to yourself and to the world so that we're creating a world we want to live in, both in this life and any others.
Dreaming it into being. I appreciate that answer so much. And you for coming on again, Linda, thank you so much for sharing, and all of you for tuning in your beautiful brainwaves and incredible hearts. Until next time, journey well. Also, before we sign off, I wanted to remind you to download the Golden Key audio or ebook as my free gift to you at goldenkey.gift using the Golden Key code POSITIVEHEAD. And please, if you enjoy my gift, leave a positive review on Amazon so others can find the book and unlock their lives with the help of the Golden Key as well.